Happy Shabbat to one and all. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We've got a full cast of characters, a early arriving James, a prompt Kirk, and Larry, you just snuck in there by the skin of your teeth.
That's just the way it's been going around here lately. I caught some of your observation show today. It was pretty good. A lot of times we miss the angle that Richard had put that up in Unpopular. We missed that Babylon also entails our governments. I mean, as sad as it is, I mean, look, you had an FBI dump here late on a Friday on Labor Day weekend telling you that Hillary Clinton lied about absolutely everything, and they're scratching their heads. The FBI, they just can't figure out why a Secretary of State doesn't understand what a classified document is, and I don't know. I live in a land
of
course.
One of the things I learned about business, and you were in politics, so you know, if you have bad news and you don't want anybody
you do it on a weekend.
But not only do you do it on a weekend, you do it on a Friday at the end of the business day of a 3-day weekend, and that way no one's going to cover it.
Yeah, now the FBI is acting like political spin meisters. I mean,
they are
insane. I mean, and you know what's even worse than that? You want to know what it really is? That they say 60% of the people find Hillary Clinton, or 59%, less than trustworthy. Why isn't it 100%? What's wrong with that 40%?
There is absolutely no question that Hillary Clinton is dishonest, and that she and Bill Clinton turned the U.S. government into a money-making machine specifically for their own lifestyle, and that they used his position while he was president to create the Clinton Foundation with a promise to pay millions into it when he left office, which would have been a bribe if they paid it while he was in office, but the fact they paid it as soon as he left office, therefore it's not legally a bribe, just wholly dishonest. And then when she becomes Secretary of State, and I wonder, why in the world would she take a demotion from a New York senator to Secretary of State? Secretary of State, that is how they funded the Clinton administration. You want access? You pay millions to our foundation.
Clinton Foundation.
We'll do it. So
it's just so bizarre.
Her position on almost everything, including Benghazi, has been an outright lie. I mean, she began with her lies when she accused Republicans of a great right-wing conspiracy because there was absolutely no interaction between her husband and the 21-year-old intern in the Oval Office, Monica Lewinsky. And she's been dishonest ever since.
I've got to give you one more thing I saw. I have not watched a lot of news. I'm disgusted by it. It's all spin. Nobody wants to tell the truth. I saw the Fox News bragging about Chris Wallace being picked as a presidential debate moderator. Okay, that's really wonderful. Except I saw Chris Wallace come out and they asked him about this dump. You know, I don't know, I can't remember, I stubbed my toe, I hit my head, I didn't know, I was never trained. How would I know? And on, at least over 2 dozen times in this
I'm in
document that's called a 302.
Never given this job, right? Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm a total incompetent boob, yet I run commercials talking about one little mistake and the world could be at our throat. You know, talk about a walking mistake. But, you know, I'm sitting there looking at this, and Chris Wallace, you know what his take was on all this stuff they released today? You know what it was? His take was this simple. Well, what she was doing was trying to make sure she wasn't in a legal situation there, and she successfully did that. That was his take. That's why he's a presidential
debater. What an ass clown.
Totally. That's why he's a moderator, because we can't tell the truth to anybody. We live in Laodicea, so we dance on legalism.
That is the difference. The Wall Street, not the Wall Street Journal. the Washington Post, which is extraordinarily liberal. That's the, now the newspaper of, of Amazon.
Sure.
The Washington Post actually did, and the Washington Post now, and make this clear before I even say this, by correctly assessing Hillary Clinton's character and lack thereof, we are not endorsing her opponent. We are anti-political. We don't take a stand. We expose and condemn both parties. Now, it was interesting that the Washington Post, which is extraordinarily anti-Trump, I mean, they actually, during the primary, had a session where they came out and announced that they were going to do everything in their power to demean Donald Trump. They, the Los Angeles Times and the Boston Globe, all collectively said, we're going, as a newspaper, to trash the man's reputation.
They straight up said that, huh? Just
straight
up.
Said it.
And then you're supposed to read their commentary? Okay.
All three, the Los Angeles Times, during the primary, the Los Angeles Times, the Boston Globe, and the Washington Post, all said they were going to use their editorial capability
to destroy Trump.
They, of all newspapers, came out with a very well-written, well-researched, and actually judgmental editorial about the Clinton Foundation. And they said, in essence, that the Clinton Foundation, they didn't say in essence, they just said the Clinton Foundation exists for the sole purpose of supporting the Clinton lifestyle, to provide them with the homes and airplanes and vehicles and lifestyle that they have come to enjoy. And its purpose has never been about charity. It is always a bit about them. And they have solicited contributions for access, and that the only thing that prevents it from moving from wholly and completely unethical to illegal is that there is not a direct tie between a contribution and a change of action that resulted in a legal description of a bribe. But he says, can you imagine
if, you
how
know,
far
if you've
we
got 30,000 missing emails that you've scrubbed, bleached, as they put it, I guess you would be missing connections there. You know, I mean,
yeah, so it's
sure.
The only thing that, the only difference between the Clinton Foundation putting Bill and Hillary in prison for bribery for the rest of their lives, and just a smear on their reputation for anybody that's got their eyes open, is that it is unethical but not illegal. And that's basically what the moderator of the upcoming presidential election said. She did a very nice job. She kept from being illegal. She avoided being illegal. Great. And the Washington Post said, that is where we have fallen as a country.
Well, and that's the truth. I mean, but that's part of Babylon. And, you know, they don't call it programming for nothing. I mean, you get all these movies and all this, and, you know, the spy in the end, he's going to be murdered, but he points to the New York Times building, you know. Well, they're going to get this information. You know, the last people, if I wanted to get information out that was, you know, talked about any serious matter of any serious person in the government would be a major newspaper.
Yes,
a small
you know,
newspaper, you might
yeah,
stand a chance.
Roy sent me a note the other day about how there has been, and there generally has been, it's for a number of different reasons. Unpopular truth is a significant reason. Frank's Power on High group that has an outreach, Richards, that has put all of this information and made it available to people, along with a number of very interesting articles, and the Don's site that provides the audio for all of this, and others, collectively have created an awareness via the Internet of Yahweh's testimony that has created a significant acceleration in covenant participation. We're witnessing...
It's a big deal.
Scores of people participate in the covenant that would not have otherwise been there. And it's from any one of those various different sources that people are arriving. But the only tool that we have, like the last that we got a letter on this week was from Clement down in Republic of South Africa.
Okay.
Yeah. Without the Internet, we would have had no chance of reaching him. And I'm here to tell you that while the Internet has been the tool that has, and I think it was the tool that Yosha was talking about when he says that the good news about his beneficial message would be provided to the entire world, that it is what we are sharing, and it is via the Internet, so that this is the means to it. But that we are very close to a time where what we are saying will not be allowed.
No, I know that. Yeah, but I mean, we're getting real close, actually.
We're getting
real close.
We still have this opportunity, but there is a time where what we are presenting, what we are saying, will not be allowed because it does not fall into the multicultural, politically correct view of the world. Truth from God is not something that they are going to tolerate.
Well, you know, I just got a call from Hendro and Andrew over in England.
Yeah.
And,
They
you know them, right, Larry?
Right, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, they called me about their neighbor.
Yeah,
you're talking about their neighbor was actually
the mother of the girl that got
killed. Go ahead and tell the story there. Yeah.
Well, he may call in, but I'll tell you what, just in case he can't get to the phone to call in later, he will. What they said was they were just livid over the report, the false reporting in Australia on that murder of that young lady who was about 21 years old, who was killed by the Muslim, Alan Al-Rakbar.
Yeah.
And
right.
The story was this, they got it from the
Islam. It was just a love triangle. Right.
No, it had nothing to do with that. He didn't know her. She didn't know him. Her neighbor, within one or two houses down, is a guy named Tom, and he was the only one of all that crowd that attacked the Muslim while he was attacking the girl, trying to stop him. And he got whacked about 40 times. He got whacked 20 times, and unfortunately, he's just now passed away.
Oh.
That
takes great courage and character.
Yes. Well, she said Angie's known him since he was born, and she said, you know, he was like that. Anytime you needed some help, he jumped right in, and he was on holiday there touring around for about a year. And loved Australia, and the family and his sister went back to hold his hand, you know, toward the last, and hopefully he would pull through, but he didn't. And the police told them that he was Alan Al-Rakbar. They told him they have it on film, they have it on voice recording. He also was slaughtering a dog at the same time, which is very
Muslim thing to
do. Like, you know. And they just, and these people, they can't, and the thing that's so making everyone so livid about it is they won't report the truth, you know, when it would serve their interest to do so. I mean, it's horrible.
There is,
it's just absolutely horrible.
The press, and this is why what Larry said is correct, it doesn't matter who the media is. To be a participant in the media is very much like to be a teacher in any one of the Western academia circles. You have to be politically correct to be in the media. You have to be politically correct to be a teacher. And if you're, and by being politically correct, you will absolutely, unequivocally reject the truth when the truth does not fit the politically correct socialist secular agenda. And the socialist secular agenda is all about multiculturalism and tolerance and embracing everybody and pretending that we can all coexist if we just all understand one another. And so they absolutely, unequivocally, since they intend to bring in more and more Muslims into their countries, and they want the world to accept Islam, they will absolutely, unequivocally lie when it comes to it. And the same thing now is true, by the way, of everyone in American politics, everyone in world politics, everyone in academia, and everyone in the media. And so universally, the truth is discarded in favor of the lie. 100% of the time.
Well, I mean, even you were talking today about the Gulf of Tonkin and how, you know, a president to save his legacy would go ahead and sacrifice 55,000 men.
Correct.
And he, over something that, you know, is taught as a false flag today at the War College. Everybody knows it. The right. Gulf of Tonkin never happened.
Woodrow Wilson, where he deliberately, purposefully, stopped the German ads. They bought American newspapers, Morgan did, to get America to, J.P. Morgan, to get America to engage in the war on the behalf of Britain so that J.P. Morgan wouldn't go bankrupt as Britain foreclosed on their on the loans. And so J.P. Morgan and Woodrow Wilson, with the Federal Reserve, which had just been created 3 years prior, deliberately had the Lusitania sunk and precluded Germany from running the ads, saying this is what they're doing is an act of war. And so they did it so that they could engage the U.S. troops, and then they rallied around the flag with patriotism in the most hellacious conditions known in human history, all to save a banker.
You know, and if you look it up, and of course, you know, Kirk, you did a lot of work on that, and so I went and followed it up for about a month. I did a lot of reading in that, and you know, basically, he had every site openly pretty much states there was a 14-point New World Order plan.
Yes, there was. Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, Woodrow Wilson. I mean, it's out there. It's
right, yeah.
Public knowledge.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, when did that happen? Do it.
He gave a speech. Yeah, he gave a speech on it, and that was the agenda. And so, who cares that American lives were sacrificed? And to initiate the plan, the only way to do it was to have the world so weakened. And the way that he weakened the world was by what's called the Spanish flu. It was a form of deliberate anthrax, the forerunner of anthrax, that was tested at the U.S. Mexican border, and then propagated at a U.S. military camp in Kansas, and then sent around the world and around the country, and over 100 million people died as a result of it.
Yeah, somewhere between 100 million and 200 million, depending on who you listen to. I'm telling you, it was an
incredible. It kept on spreading, just they couldn't stop it. So,
just awesome. I mean, and yet we've got monuments built to these monsters here in Babylon. We really
Correct.
Do.
Right. And I'm FDR has a monument built to him. Woodrow Wilson is celebrated with the Wilson Library there in Stanton or Waynesboro, but right there in Central Virginia.
And you know, they used to transfer money with the $100,000 bills, and it was his picture on the front of that damn thing. It's no longer in the currency, but I mean, they actually transferred large sums of money using the $100,000 Wilson bill.
Because you know, George W. Bush invaded both Afghanistan and Iraq based on lies. Al Qaeda was in Afghanistan was not responsible for 9/11. That's not where the plan had come from. It came from Ramzi Youssef, who was with Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines. And he was already a prisoner of the U.S. because of his involvement in the first attack on the World Trade Center. So we went into Afghanistan on a pile of lies, mainly because Bush wanted to facilitate a natural gas pipeline to get natural gas from the Caspian Sea through Pakistan into a free water port. And then he created a pile of lies because he wanted to be a wartime president to invade Iraq and created this myth that Colin Powell helped him promote at the United Nations that there were weapons of mass destruction, and conservative Republicans continued to parrot that. I remember I did hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands of shows saying it's an absolute lie. And boy, the pushback I got from conservatives trying to defend the president's action. Of course, we know absolutely for certain. In fact, Britain is considering indicting Tony Blair because Tony Blair knew it was a lie and lied to the British people about supporting Bush's invasion. We're deadly. We're dishonest.
How long did you talk to Bush in the White House before he did that invasion? I mean, you
I talked to him before he was in the White House. I talked to him in the governor's mansion in Austin, Texas, and we talked for about 5 hours about why he wanted to run for president, what he was going to do if he was elected president, and that's when he told me that he wanted to be a wartime president, that he thought that his success as a president would be materialized if, in fact, a crisis led to war. And so when 9/11 happened, I knew exactly what he was going to do because he told me what he was going to do.
You told him what would happen, correct? I mean, you know, it's not like he was blind. I mean, you were real
straightforward. No, I told him exactly what would happen. I walked out of that meeting horrified. In fact, it was right after that meeting that I had the dinner with Henry Kissinger. And, you know, it was a different time in my life, of course, but I had a meeting with Henry Kissinger, and I said, what's with this man? This is, I was horrified by his lack of intelligence and by his just grotesque immorality. And Henry Kissinger said, well, that's it. He said, you should have actually known him while his father was in the White House. He was a druggie. He was an absolutely lost human being, no contribution whatsoever. He is really, really a lost soul. So I can see why you were disappointed by him. There is no substance there. There is no there.
Kissinger told you that. I mean, straight up told you that. And Henry Kissinger isn't exactly a bastion of morality himself. You know, I mean, he's pretty much a monster himself.
I talked to Kissinger about some of the things that he did that were grotesquely inappropriate. For example, he's the one that came up with the Atoms for Peace program with Jerry Ford to give Iran the nuclear power plant that is that has been the stimulus, the impetus for their entire program to create a nuclear bomb. And we gave them the fuel, and we built the plant for them. So we know that they have the capability because we gave it to them. And then, of course, there was negotiating peace with honor on behalf of Nixon when they knew that the moment
12 divisions of North Vietnamese were coming down and slaughter everybody.
Right. I mean, at least he was right in that that an excuse had to be made to get out of there. So you've got to give him credit for that. No matter what the rhetoric was, an excuse had to be made to leave. You know, he basically said, too.
I mean, I've seen quotes from him. He said food needs to be used as a weapon. He also said the American military man, and this is what he thinks of military, he says the American military man is an animal to be used to kill and to be killed. That's what he said. That was his quote. I mean,
that's what
he's a monster.
Or in their view, sure.
Straight up monster, the guy.
Yeah, that's pretty much the view of the military.
Well, I mean, you know, when you round trip, you know, the thing, if you have that view, that's fine. But you know, when you go out and you wave the flag and you start wars and you run people, of course, British.
What did John say about King
Man,
Saul when he said, you know, what is the first thing
he's
going to do?
He's going to take your young men, turn them into
right. And then he's going to take your money to make war materials, and then he's going to deploy them. That's the 1, 2, 3. He's going to take your sons and make them his soldiers. He's then going to confiscate your money, and he's going to use that to make weapons, and then he's going to deploy your sons and those weapons immediately thereafter. And that's the 1, 2, 3.
Fairly prophetic, isn't
government.
It? You know,
right.
Fairly prophetic.
Exactly.
I don't know how accurate
God can be.
He is,
well,
yeah,
you know what's amazing to me? Again, it's the 40% that don't find the thief running for president to be a thief. I mean, you really have to have a bag over your head and be in a cave with your eyes closed not to see it. And that tells me something about the American public. It does anyway, because the majority are Christians and we share Yahweh's words. I mean, you know, they don't really care what God has to say because their religion says something completely opposite. It's just an insane possibility that this world, I'm surprised it's made it this far. And of course, it's not going to make it.
You know, and while politics and this interaction between patriotism and militarism, for example, the Colin Kaepernick thing where so many people, including Donald Trump, are having a conniption fit that Colin Kaepernick won't stand for the national anthem. While we disagree on his reasons for doing so, I won't stand for it either.
I won't either. I said the same thing. I mean, I'm not going to sit there. He supports a racial, a bigoted organization to fight bigotry. I mean, that's like saying we're intolerant of intolerance. I think you wrote that.
It
somewhere.
Is. Yeah, it's,
you know, I mean, it's the same thing.
His reasons for doing to it are
insane.
He had three interviews.
Childish,
one of the three interviews was saying where he said it's police brutality is a serious problem in this country. It is. And two of the interviews are about the fact that blacks are somehow treated unfairly and that whites are out to kill them. And
that's a lie.
Not, that's just not true.
Straight up lie.
But the fact that in this country you are demeaned, and it's demeaned at the highest level. I mean, it's the attacks on Kaepernick and the news on Kaepernick. This is now a backup quarterback for one of the two or three worst teams in the NFL. So this is a has-been backup quarterback for amongst the worst teams in the NFL, and he is the dominant story in sports, with everybody condemning him because he won't stand for the national anthem and how that is unacceptable in America. You in America, you are either patriotic or Americans are opposed to you and will attack you. I remember my son.
You know, and there's something that he's
style. Yeah, my son follows my not because of me, but he because he knows Yahweh, and so he won't stand for the national anthem either. And he was a little slow on the uptake at a football game at Baylor. And normally, you know, I kind of sense this is coming, and you know, I get out early because I don't want a confrontation. I don't want to explain to a moron why I don't stand for the national anthem. Because they're just not capable of understanding
anyway. You're there to have a good time.
I'm there to have a good time, and I don't want a confrontation with the moron. I'll leave early. Well, he was a little slow, and they started a prayer before it, and he was trying to walk into the concession so he wouldn't have to play along, and two guys said, "You're not going anywhere." And he said, "Take your damn hat off." He said, "No, I'm going to the concession. Take your hat off, bow your head right now, and you stop." And physically threatened him.
Well, we would have went to blows right there.
I believe
it. You know, I won't tolerate it. I just wouldn't have tolerated it better.
Yeah.
You know, it tells us something about groupthink, doesn't it? And by the way, for any Christians that might be listening,
well, that's the reason why there's religion. That's why there's patriotism. It's all groupthink based upon a pile of lies.
Yeah, but I want to point this out. You know, if there are any Christians listening, and I want you to consider this, they claim Holy, who was actually the Eastern consort to the Eastern sun god Krishna. It's just a sun festival, was to replace Kodesh, which means set apart. Now, if you're trying to be set apart from the world, how could you be involved in groupthink anywhere?
Oh, when Yahweh said, do not, I mean, recognize that fathers corrupt their sons to the third and fourth generation. At the end of of the second statement, he etched in stone, which was from beginning to end, an expose on why he despises religion. Then he says that thousands are going to benefit from his mercy by observing the terms and conditions of the covenant. And Yosha confirms that and says that the way to life is narrow, and very few find it. And the way to death and destruction is wide, and most people go that way. So if you have anything that is popular, patriotism, nationalism, militarism, politics, and religion, any one of those things that is popular has to be the means to death and destruction, or God's a liar.
Yeah, just wanted to point that out. It's hard to be set apart.
Can you apply logic and reason to?
Mm-hmm.
It's just an ongoing. It's just such a mess. I watched an hour and a half of political discourse. Most of it had to do with racism in America. And, you know, they marched out this consortium of boobs, the same people that, I don't know who elected them. They call themselves leaders in the African-American community. I didn't know they were elected. Most of them were preachers, by the way.
Oh, of course.
And they came out and they decried all the oppression going on. And one lady, literally, her answer... Are you ready for this? Her answer was something akin, and these are her words, not mine, to the Marshall Plan. Now, you know, you want to go in and take the same bunch of idiots and build them new buildings and hand them jobs and you know...
Well, they don't want a job.
No,
the generations don't work.
You're going to take...
Don't have a character to hold a job. Don't have the character to contribute anything that anybody would want to pay them for.
Exactly.
No, they're dependent. They lack morality.
And that was another thing Lyndon Johnson did, by the way.
There are some wonderful people with character, with high morals, that are, for reasons not of their own making, have become homeless and poor. It happens. And we as a society do a very poor job of helping them out. But
yeah, because they're so busy helping the thugs.
We are absolutely creating a dependency culture where people have no character, no backbone, no sense of value, no willingness to make a contribution. They just think that those who have been successful owe them.
It isn't even a contribution. I don't like that. I like the word production, because productivity is smiled on. And when I hear contribution, it almost sounds to me like, again, part of a collective. I'd say production. But that does contribute in a positive way. I just want to throw that in there.
So it's we've created a bankrupt culture. You know, it's one of the things that Yoda says routinely. Is that he values action. He values work. He values productivity. He likes people who are engaged and are willing to make a difference. That you can be in a bad situation, poor, and still be someone who is on the cusp of returning to productivity. You look at our good friend Richard. Richard was abused by a colleague, and his job was taken away from him, and his car, and therefore his apartment, and everything was taken away by an abusive, lying, dishonest colleague. And he found himself on the streets.
Sure.
He found himself
sure.
His wife on the streets. But while he was on the street, his character and attitude did not change. It was tough. In fact, it was miserable there for a while. And in our society, rather than helping someone out like that, there was no underpinning. There was nothing that really was made available to him of any consequence. But his attitude, character, desire, will to work again and to be productive never waned. And so, he got back on his feet, as did his wife. It goes right back down to attitude. Are you desirous of making a contribution? I'm retired now from a business, but I've made my contribution and I was productive in business, and now I produce these translations and commentary and try to do these shows. And if it wasn't for that, I think I would shrivel up and decay. There is something enormously helpful and beneficial about being productive. Today I spent all day working on Chapter 10. It was a good use of my time. Work and being productive is character building.
Yes, it is. I mean, and you feel good about what you do. But I just want to finish the agenda that this woman talked about was. This was following, 64 people being shot in Chicago and 8 dead in one weekend. Okay? And the agenda she was pushing, this Marshall Plan, was advancing the idea that stealing more of others' labors and pumping it into this wonderful neighborhood that somehow this grand plan of free money into this low-rent neighborhood would somehow lead to safer streets, better students, heightened awareness, that could somehow take a street thug and turn him into the next bastion of enlightenment.
The street thug is a street thug because they were poorly raised. And they were weak. And so when the other street thugs offered them a chance to be included, a chance to have drugs, a chance to have sex with their prostitutes, they went along with it, and they quickly did things that caused them to be made. To be part of the thuggery, they had to go and randomly shoot someone, and now their living is made destroying the lives of others. Selling drugs.
Now, can I ask you this? I mean, you understand giving them money is not
the solution.
That'd be like handing heroin to a junkie and saying this should solve the problem, right?
Correct. That's exactly the same thing.
The more money you got, the more you'll be of what you are. I mean, if you're a drunk, you'll just be a good one.
That's why you don't give more money.
So if you're a thug, you'll just be a more bigger thug.
Yeah, we do not.
You'll be a well encouraged thug.
We don't encourage responsibility. And if you're not responsible, then you're not driven to acquire the kind of information that is necessary to make sound decisions and to do things that have a net value. For example, we have a lot of people that write and say, you know, can you just shorten the statute? What is it you really believe? You know, how do I just say, the message in a nutshell is observe the
tomorrow. I'm looking for something easy, for one thing.
This is why I'm talking about being engaging and being active and working at it. Part of Yahweh's plan is a screening mechanism. If you're not willing to work at it, invest the time, enjoy the process of discovery, then he doesn't want to spend eternity with you. So there is no, somebody wrote and said, you know, without blood sacrifice, how could you be saved? And so, you know, I could answer that question, but to answer it so that you understand it, you need about a year's worth of reading. Right, about a year's worth of reading and studying, and you'd be in a position to appreciate the answer. But if I give it to you without that, there is no way it's going to have any value, any meaning to you. And of course, his ultimate response, nice guy, but his ultimate response is, you know, it's so disorienting because based upon what you're saying, everything I've been told is a lie.
Right.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah,
correct.
Boy, I'm surprised. You mean to tell me men in the past would lie in order to, control other people?
You.
Unreal. Wow.
The majority of
I'm kind of amazed that people can't get that. I don't know what part of that they don't get.
Well,
and by the way, when we share these words that we've taken the time to learn, they say, you know, it's funny, I've never heard that before.
This is Yashayah 1:13. This is the 13th statement and the most important prophetic document ever shared with humankind. You could not be more anti-religion than this statement. God says, you should not increasingly and habitually. Can you say, you should not religiously? Come. Continuing to bring devastatingly worthless, completely invalid, and deceptively futile tributes, gifts, and offerings, such as money, such as donations. Incense is a detestable abomination to me. I cannot comprehend, I cannot endure, nor can I overcome the deceptive and disastrous falsifications associated with your oppressive and lifeless religious assemblies, which hinder and withhold the benefits of the time of renewal and the Shabbat, the calling out of the Mikre invitations to meet. So there are several just stunningly important aspects of this. The first is that God is saying to the world, what you're offering me, you know, your attendance at a church service, your paying of your alms, your tithes and your offerings, all of that stuff disgusts me. It is, why do you bring it? He's saying, why do you bring it? You know, people that put their money in the collection dish at a church, what do you think, God is poor? Do you think up there in the seventh dimension that God is looking for the almighty greenback and said, you know, but I wanted some of this fiat currency because, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay my mortgage next month. Look at all these people I got to feed. Boy, if you guys don't send some money up here in a hurry, I'm in real trouble. I mean, can you imagine? So it's got to say, come on, your offerings, your tributes, your gifts, why are you bringing them? They're worthless.
You know what? I've read that, and I even put it in the note on tithing.
Yes.
And then I got a note full of, you know, Yahweh doesn't want your sacrifice. We're not to do the work of the Molossus.
Yeah. In right, fact, that's what you're offering.
Even trying to do that, what we're saying is that he failed. He needs our help.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
see,
know.
It's the God that wants to be worshipped. It's the God that went to Paul and said, you know, boy, I really tried with this Torah thing and with this covenant and with Noah and with Abraham and with Moshe and with Yosha and. God, man, I really tried. I gave it my best, but obviously I failed. You know, I can't save anyone. You know, I had a good run there for a while, creating the universe, but it's obvious that I'm a failure. I can't save anyone. So you, Shaul, who has admitted that you're demon-possessed, has admitted that you're vicious and murderous, and who has admitted that that you're a sexual pervert. You, of all people, I want you to contradict me. I want you to contradict my son, Yosha. I want you to contradict the apostles that he has. And then I want you to come up with a plan, because I'm sure that you can save people that I could not save.
Yeah, that's maybe that comment. Demon will help you.
Maybe that demon will help you. Yeah. It's, why not? Why don't you say that I inspired you to contradict me and to come up with an entirely different plan? Yeah, that'll really work. That's the God that men have created. And so, in most religious settings, of course, incense is present. And God is saying, I detest it. You know, I walk into those old, as I did, I don't anymore, but when I was traveling around the world, I walk into those old cathedrals, and the first thing you have to do is walk past the statue of Mary with all the incense burning. And it just is detestable. Or you go into a Buddhist temple. Incense is burning everywhere. And then God says, I cannot comprehend, I cannot endure, I cannot overcome the deceptive and disastrous falsification associated with your lifeless religious assemblies. You know, when an individual smart enough to create a six-dimensional universe and bright enough to conceive DNA and author life says, I can't comprehend something, you've got to be really stupid.
Yeah, running off to church, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, he just says, I don't get it. I mean, how could you be so stupid? Yeah. You know, there was a time when I think most of us had some empathy for the misled Christian. We felt sorry for them. And what God is saying here, no, I'm not feeling sorry for it. I don't get it. I cannot comprehend how you could be that stupid. Once it became obvious that Paul was a lying scumbag, once it became obvious that Muhammad was a lying scumbag, from that moment on, it became extraordinarily easy to reject them and accept Yahweh. And you're just saying, how in the world would anyone believe this rubbish? It's so obviously false. When a man acknowledges that he's demon-possessed and you think that he was inspired by God. How could you be that stupid? And that's what God is saying.
Yeah, but you're talking about from your perspective, which is somebody who's actually took the time to look. Our problem is that we present, you know, there's a lot of hours and a lot of effort and a lot of thought that goes into these the best translations in the world, probably. And if there is another one out there, they're hiding them. Okay.
I hope there are. I hope there's better.
I'm sure you do.
We're not
but,
being defensive here. The better
so
ones
far,
are
I haven't seen. Well, thank you, and I'm in the same boat. And so, and we've all looked. I know we've all looked. And so you lay these things out there to people, and you put them right in front of their face, and you show them. I like to start with very, very, very obvious, copy edits, and you show it to them side by side. This word does not appear there. This word can mean this or this, but it cannot mean all that. You lay all that out in front of somebody, and they go, well, I think I'll just hold on to my Bible because I don't think you're loving enough. You know, they come up with ridiculous things like that. Well,
give me an example.
How loving
I've just translated, because I'm spending a lot of time in the seventh and final meeting, in each of the acts that play out between Yahweh and Abraham.
Over in 10,
and,
is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, at the end of 10. I'm in a section, we'll just finish a section, where Abraham says, that I'm going to use the name, I would apply a name for this place, and I'm going to call it Yahweh Ra'ah. Yahweh Ra'ah. And without exception, every English Bible says it means the Lord provides. Well, of course, Yahweh doesn't mean Lord. But Kirk and James, you guys have both done enough translations that you come across the word Ra'ah a number of times. Now, for Yahweh giving or providing, the word would be Nathan. Nathan is the Hebrew word for providing something, providing a gift, okay? That would be Nathan. Ra'ah. Do you know what Ra'ah means in Hebrew? Nasa is to lift up.
It's Ra'ah. It's all about viewing and seeing.
That's correct.
But you have a face looking.
Revealing, observing, seeing, and it can be by implication. You can go from, and it's clearly part of the word, observing, leading to being perceptive, which provides the proper perspective that leads to understanding. So the word is the primary meaning of Ra'ah means to see, to view, to witness, to use the perception of sight, to be observant, and as a result of being observant, being perceptive, coming up with a proper perspective from which to view things, and ultimately to understand. That's what Ra'ah means. So why did they all say that he named the place, the Lord will provide? I mean, there is no way whatsoever to get from Ra'ah to provide.
No.
Now, the reason they did it is because the lamb was caught in the thicket, and so they just said, well, that lamb was a substitute for Abraham or for Yitzhak, so. The Lord was providing a sacrifice as opposed to Yitzhak being sacrificed. Well, Yitzhak was never, ever going to be sacrificed. Yahweh made that very clear. And, of course, Abraham knew it. But yet they make it that Yahweh provides. Now, what's interesting here is that Yahweh was not seen. He spoke to Abraham through a malach during this particular encounter. And then he finally transitions to speaking to him in first person, but he definitely was not seen. So you cannot translate it, Yahweh is seen. But you can absolutely translate it, Yahweh reveals, because it was through this story that Yahweh revealed who he is, where to look for him. He reveals how to come to know him, how to engage in a relationship with him, how to participate in the covenant. He revealed what the inner play is between the terms and conditions and the benefits of the covenant and the Moed Mikre. All of that is revealed in that story. So Yahweh Ra'ah, Yahweh revealed. All you have to do to get it right is to be honest. You know, are you? Yeah, is it easy to say, well, every translation has it, you know, it provides, and he did provide the lamb, I'll just go along with that. Well, but Ra doesn't mean to provide. There's another example. When the Malak tells Abraham to put down his hand, and says, you know, don't reach out with your hand toward the boy. Do not usurp the boy's free will, is what it actually says. Don't usurp his free will. He says, because I now, Yada, know for certain that you, and if you read every English Bible, without exception, you fear your God. Fear your God is Yare.
Yeah, of course.
Now, let me tell you, ask you a question here. How old was Abraham at the time, just approximately?
Oh, my God. He had to be 98, 90, 100.
It was close to 100 when Yitzhak was born. Yitzhak's now 13.
Well, that's close. Okay, 113
years old, thereabouts, okay? 113 years old. He's at the very end of his life. He's had a good life, and he's at the end of it. Yitzhak was, his son was 13 years old. If he feared that God was going to force him to kill his son at the end of his life, do you think that Abraham would have waltzed up that hill with his son? If he thought that his God,
not a chance.
If he was afraid that God was going to kill him if he didn't kill his son, not a prayer. Now, what's the first thing? When Yahweh actually appeared the first time to Abraham in the Promised Land, you know what the first words out of Yahweh's mouth were?
Don't be afraid.
That's it. Don't be afraid. So if the first words out of Yahweh's mouth were, don't be afraid, and he just waltzed his son up this mountain and told his son, by the way, hey, don't, you know, because his son said, hey, you know, I see the wood, I see the fire, but where's the lamb? And Abraham says, hey, don't worry about it, kid, you're going to be the one sacrificed. No, he says, Yahweh's going to provide. Don't worry, Yahweh's going to provide. Do you think he would have said that if he was afraid? There is zero chance that the Malak said, hey, you know, you disagreed with what disavowed what Yahweh told you at the first meeting, which was do not be afraid. And now that you have rejected what Yahweh has said and that you are, in fact, afraid, therefore I am going to affirm the covenant with you. But yet they all render it because you fear your God. I mean, how stupid you have to be.
Well, it's not stupid from their perspective. It's intentional from their perspective because, as you point out,
they want
you
to fear
religion
God.
And government kick through fear mechanisms. You know,
right.
That's
right.
Yeah, it's all. Yeah. It's all.
You
not that stupid.
You want a perfect example of how Abraham did not fear Yahweh? Look at what happened. Yahweh came to him, told him, this city, Sodom and Gomorrah, they're so corrupt, so bad, I am going to destroy them.
Right.
You know, he knows God's capable of it. Did he go, oh, dang, whatever, God, do what you want to do. He goes, wait
a minute. Just a fair mate, man. No, he said there, you know, what if there were, what if there's 10?
The Christians have come up, by the way.
With, all the way down to one.
the Christians have come up with this, some rule that if there's so many righteous people in a city, it can't be destroyed. They missed the whole point of the whole thing.
That's the whole point.
I mean, it's insane. I forget what does they have a number of 10 or whatever it is, whatever.
By the way, you know how many righteous people were in Sodom?
There were none.
Zero. Zero.
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
Including Lot, including his daughter, including his wife. The answer was none. And there's only one reason that Yahweh spared Lot. Only one.
Because Abraham wanted him to. He knew
Abraham
wanted him.
That's right. That's the only reason he was spared. Is because.
And that, you know, that's I begin to wonder about that with the relatives on Teruah, if they'll listen at that 1 minute. I already know if they look back, they're done. But, you know.
Right. Yeah, his wife.
It leads me to believe that maybe.
Wanting what she left behind. Longing for what she left behind. And if you long for government and for the societal pleasures, if you will, to be affiliated with that, you're the walking dead. And so she was turned into a pillar of salt. Now,
you know what story?
You know, the word Shoah appears in this statement. Larry, you're familiar with
deceptive,
what Shoah means.
It's destructive.
Right. It's devastatingly worthless, completely invalid, and deceptively futile. Are you familiar with a rabbinical system called Shoah?
Yeah, I just wrote about that, Nunpop. That's called Shav. When you first told me it was called the Shav system, I was blown away. They named it after deception and lifelessness.
Right.
And,
as a matter of fact, Shav itself
the
structure. They was the corruption
in your
of
face
Shoah. The word is actually Shoah. In
yeah,
fact,
sure.
if I were to have transliterated it the way that Hebrew lexicons do, I would have it as the Shav in this particular case. Now, the reason I did not do it is because there is no V in Hebrew. The word is written S-H-W-A-N, and so S-H-W-A-N is Shoah.
Shoah.
That's the only pronunciation. But the rabbinical system of diacritical marking that is the basis of the Masoretic text is based on a system that the rabbis came up with that they named Shoah, and then they corrupted Shoah based upon their system to Shav, and that is the Masoretic diacritical marking system.
You know, they had to know
and
what they were doing
the word
when they called
it completely
that.
Invalid, deceptively futile.
Yeah, I mean, that can't be an accident. I mean, it can't be. It's just insane.
No.
It's insane.
It's like in Islam where Satan says that the things that are really good are halal. And that's Satan's
yeah.
first name.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, it's also part of the in-your-face, and I've shared this a few times now with the Macedonian, you know, guy that's going to be the beast. Their flag is a rising sun, and then their national anthem is
right.
"We children of the rising sun will defeat
right.
the world" or whatever the hell it's
right.
however it starts
more,
something
yeah,
like
more
that.
In your face, right?
Yeah, boy, that's I right. think Satan loves it. Halal Ben Shikar loves being in your face with who he is.
Right. You know, and then here's this word, this Yakal. Is means to witness, to understand, and to prevail. But the word Yakal was negated by Lo. So it's Lo Nakal. And if you, the only honest translation of Lo Nakal is, I cannot comprehend, I'm incapable of witnessing or enduring, and I cannot prevail over, which means I cannot overcome. So what God is saying here is that I don't understand the appeal of religion. I don't understand the appeal of it. You know, your counterfeits are precluding the gifts that I had intended for you. So why in the world would you accept and believe in these obvious Babylonian lies and reject the gift that I'm offering you? So he says, I can't comprehend why you'd be that stupid. And then you go to the next point. He says, I can't endure. So what he's saying there is that he is not able to stand religious deception. So what that means is there is a 0% possibility that you can be religious and be part of his family or live in his home in heaven. If he can't endure it, you sure as hell aren't going to be enduring with him. So not only does God say, this is so stupid, what your religious rituals, and they are so Babylonian, they're so obviously false. And God is saying, I mean, like the Pauline Christianity. How in the world do you think that I told a guy to contradict me and come up with a plan because I'm a complete failure? I mean, how could you be that stupid? How could you believe a religion that's based upon me dying?
Well, you know, you could be that stupid and you feel confused, just as we all did, okay,
yes.
Until somebody puts it in front of your face, you know. I
but,
didn't
but
just
run
into
people
the
that put it in front of their face, they ignore it. They get mad at you or mad at the at God for saying it. And God says, I can't comprehend that either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Say, I can understand
true.
Ignorance. You know, I can understand not knowing. I'm ignorant of a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, but ignorance is one thing. Irrationality
right.
is another. When you're presented
yeah.
with the evidence and you're given it and you choose the lie, that
right.
I don't understand.
I remember just what we went through. Let me finish this one, because it's just so much on what JB just said. I want to make this one point. I remember trying to write the first draft of Questioning Paul, and I came up to the point that Paul was making, that the covenant that was ratified on Mount Sinai, therefore the covenant in the Torah, was with Hagar and enslaved.
That's right. He
and
said
I looked at the Old Testament, 46, and that's what it said. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the Greek words and over again. And since it was so obviously wrong, I went to 100 websites, no exaggeration, to try to see, okay, since this is obviously a lie, obviously the inverse of the truth, how in the world is this justified? And nobody had a sane answer, not one. And so at that moment, I had a choice. I could continue to support the lie, or I could disassociate myself from the liar. Those are your choices. What are you going to do? And now, I'm going to tell you that the reason Yahweh says I cannot endure it, if Yahweh's testimony is going to be rejected and mocked by you in favor of human deceptions that are absolutely stupid. I mean, so obviously
wrong. Which is the norm. That's the norm.
Which is the norm. Can you imagine how God would feel if we're all in heaven and we're he's telling a story and the whole group of people over there says, oh, shut up. We've heard that before. We don't.
He's not real tolerant. I don't believe.
No,
that.
Just shut up. We've got a different take on that.
Right.
And it's the opposite of yours. So just shut up. We don't want to hear what you have to say. Do you think God wants the rest of us or Himself to have to endure that?
No.
That'd be hell.
That'd be hell.
I mean, you're talking about.
I can't endure it. But now the next part of it is the most important part. I got a letter from Roy, who's the, in terms of just intellect, and now Roy doesn't think he's all that smart, although he has, a PhD, and he's not only a medical doctor, but also has studied mathematics at the graduate level, and he's studied biology at the graduate level. Kirk and I
were discussing him also at our last meeting.
He's really, really extraordinarily rational, and he speaks the language of science and mathematics. He's an extraordinarily bright guy, and he wrote a guy that I've known for a long time, another medical doctor, surgeon. The two of them have made contact with one another, and they were communicating. And one of the things that Roy wrote is that he says, I've had zero success. He says, I have not had a single person that has come to accept Yahweh as God or the covenant based upon my witness to them. Not one. Now, this is the smartest dude, the most rational dude I know. This guy has got his act together. He knows Yahweh and understands Yahweh's creation. And he says, I haven't had a single person that has embraced the truth. And I remember that one of the most, in terms of just character, Kirk is about as sound in terms of just compassionate credibility is anyone I know. I don't think you've had much success either. And then
nothing. A couple of people.
Yeah, and so my response to Roy and my response to you, Kirk, is the same.
Sure.
I said okay. With Yahweh, when he wrote to the children of Israel in the second line of this, I strove to be your father. I raised you. I nurtured you. I lifted you up. I gave you everything that I had to give, and you rejected me. And he's saying it in Hosea. And he says, you are dead to me, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, God's smarter than we are. It's his testimony.
Just
his universe. He created this life. He created the plan that we've all followed and the covenant that we're part of. It's all his. And yet he fails in terms of communicating it and getting people to respond to it 999,999 times out of every 1 million attempts. He fails. Yeah, what did Yosha? Yeah, can you recall a single incident where Yosha was speaking with a religious person and that he succeeded in getting them to renounce religion and to...
No. But I'm sure Roy is probably not speaking to religious people. He knows better than that. You can't.
He comes out of the board.
Cannot.
Yeah.
Remember Clement, our friend down in SA, he was having a hard time with just his friends. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah, and so we need to recognize that where Yahweh says, I cannot overcome religious mentality, religious behavior. I cannot resolve it. I can't overcome it. I can't save a religious person. We should not expect
to help them.
We should not expect to either. It's a waste of your time. I want to point something out here. Just a couple of weeks ago, because I put a note on it, that we did a show where right there in Bereshith, and I believe it's in chapter 10 of Observations, where he comes out and he says, and it couldn't be any more obvious. Once you understand, Halal ben Shikar means arrogant son of the morning rising sun.
Right.
And they walked towards the rising sun, and they made their places of worship with these with sun-dried bricks. Now you're sitting there looking, and they were houses of worship, and we're going to tell you what to worship, and we're going to lord over you, and this is the way it's going to be. He just described every religion on the planet, right there.
Correct.
And it's so straight up. Now, how damn smart, you know, a guy. I can get this.
Larry, it gets even worse because he says that man's rhetoric. When man spoke the same language, that man's rhetoric was what caused these men to say, "We're going to make a building rise up to the heavens, and that so we could access the heavens our way." And then God says that the problem here is commingling, and that it's commingling that is the reason I'm going to call this place Babel Corruption. And then you look at that series we did, multiple shows, on the commingling of errant texts that became the Christian New Testament, or the commingling that is Islam. Islam is a commingling of the Hanif Yemen paganism combined with the Talmud of Judaism, the Babylonian Talmud, with a little bit of Christianity thrown in. It is a commingling of lies. And he says it's by commingling that we get that humankind is confused. Babel. That's the story. And Babel, by the way, is written in the same way in Hebrew as the Christian word is for Bible. And yet, it's right there in your face. It's in the book they're carrying around. And they're in one of them that makes the connection.
I'm telling you, I just said it very simply, and then upon a return in Zechariah, what does he say the problem is? They've been burned and blinded by the sun. I mean, it starts out and it ends the exact same way. None of us have to be a genius to get this. What we do have to be is receptive to the words and give it some thought. There isn't a lot of thought. Once I show you what how Satan's real name is and what it really means, and then once I show you that Sunday you're worshiping the Lord in front of a pagan cross, and point these things out to you, why would you decide? Why would you make the decision that God's words really don't matter at all?
Right. Why when Easter Sunday is based upon the sun being in the constellation of Taurus the bull, and if that is your primary holiday, and then 9 months later you have another sun related holiday, which is the winter solstice, where the days start growing longer, and that's when the son of the sun is born.
The sun
and
is
you
reborn.
Can't figure out that all of this is Babylonian.
Especially when it's put in front of your face. I'll tell you why. Because they have been most of these people, and you're not engaged in these fights to the degree that I have been, you know, on a regular basis. I know you did with emails back and forth.
I did for a while, but I don't anymore.
Yeah, no, you did it for about 5 years. You did it for a while. I know that.
Yeah,
you dealt with thousands of them. But when you do it on an ongoing basis, you see the new flavor of the day. One of the reasons that I wanted to point out that the Shabbat and Moed were two different things, and we're talking about the Moed and Bereshith, you know, the sun and the moon used, because this is a verse the lunar Shabbat people go to. This is why the guy confused us with enjoying the lunar Shabbat, or advancing it somehow. This is the verse that the lunar Shabbat people go to, because they can't tell the difference between a Moed and Shabbat, and they think the moon is involved in creating the Shabbat. It says Moed. It doesn't say Shabbat.
Right.
You know, God's a good communicator. Yahweh puts it right out there for you. If he meant Shabbat, he'd have said Shabbat. He didn't. He said Moed.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, I cannot comprehend, I endure or overcome the deceptive and disastrous falsifications associated with your oppressive and lifeless religious assemblies, which hinder and withhold the benefits of Kodesh, the time of renewal. Kodesh means time of renewal, from the verb Kodesh. The benefits of the time of renewal. Now, Yahweh does have a time of renewal. But by corrupting his time of renewal with these religious assemblies, they are foregoing the benefits. The benefits are withheld because their religious assemblies withhold and hinder those benefits. That's, you know, if you're celebrating Easter, you sure as heck aren't getting the benefits of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. Then he says, so it's the time of renewal, Kodesh, and the Shabbat. Then the third thing in the list is the calling out of the Mikra, the invitations to be called out and meet. And so there's three things. He says that your disastrous and false religious assemblies are withholding and hindering the benefits of people embracing and getting value out of the time of renewal, the Shabbat, and the Mikra.
Well, isn't that the same exact thing, though, that he's saying at the end?
Shabbat is based on the on Kodesh.
No, in Shavuot, isn't that exactly the same thing he's saying? You stand there in front of this piece of wood with this luminous God with no spirit in it, right? I mean, that's what he says. And it precludes you actually having any thought process for what this is really about. I mean, that's what he says.
Right.
And so that's what he's saying.
What you have to do, you want to, like, we're confronted here by either Kodesh or Kadosh. James, what's the difference in the Hebrew script between Kodesh and Kadosh?
The first letter.
Nothing would be the
answer
difference.
Is nothing. Kodesh and
you're
Kadosh.
Saying Kodesh. Okay, yeah,
Kodesh.
I was saying Kodesh with a Q, not a...
No, Kodesh with a C-H.
The C-H, okay. Not a bit of difference.
Right, and the verb...
Some bad pointing in that Shah system we talked about.
Right, and Kodesh, the meaning of Kodesh is to renew, to reaffirm, to reestablish. That is what Kodesh means. Kodesh is a noun. It speaks of the time of renewal. It can be translated new month, because the new month is when the light on the moon begins to renew. But in this particular case, you have to translate Kodesh. And the most straightforward, most honest, the most accurate translation of Kodesh would be time of renewal, occasion of repairing and reestablishing a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about.
And the
Shabbat, it doesn't say that the Shabbat is based upon Kodesh. It's the second of three things. The religious festivals hinder people from benefiting from Yahweh's time of renewal, Yahweh's Shabbat, and Yahweh's Mikra.
Yeah, that's what he just said.
That's right.
That's exactly
what
he
said. By
the way,
it's kind of interesting, too, that he Mikra was written as opposed to Mikra in the singular. and there is only one Mikra that is timed to be coterminous with the other definition of Kodesh, first of the month, which would be Teruah. So there is only one.
Oh, Teruah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, there's only one that's tied to that. It's kind of an interesting deal there. And, of course,
why do you suppose he tied? Why?
What is the purpose of Teruah?
I know what the purpose of Teruah is.
To say that the religious way, man's way, leads to death and destruction of the soul.
Well, yeah,
and
the trumpet. We're out there to sounding the alarm. Yeah, well,
right.
That's
true. What is God saying is that I'm sounding the alarm on the Mikra that is timed in association with Kodesh, that and the plan of seven that is part of that because it's the first day of what month?
The seventh month.
So I've got time of renewal, Kodesh, Shabbat, which is the promise of seven, and then Mikra singular.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only the seventh month, time of renewal, Mikra is Teruah. And the purpose of Teruah is to expose and condemn religion. And
oh, yeah, he just talked about blowing the trumpets in my court, of course. What am I doing here?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, yeah, I should have got that right off. Because I know what that's about.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yep.
So, and this is how now the King James renders what we just read. The King James renders it the following. Bring no more vain oblations. Incense is an abomination to me. The new moons and Sabbath, the calling of assemblies, plural, I cannot away with. It is... I didn't even get that.
I cannot away with.
It
I didn't
is
even get
iniquity,
that one.
Even the solemn meeting. So he's calling his solemn meeting here an iniquity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, what God is saying is that if your religious observances preclude people benefiting from my Mikra, my Shabbat, and my time of renewal. And specifically, they preclude people understanding the entire purpose of Teruah. What is the single, if you were to pick one of the seven Mikra that the Jews religiously are the most responsible for changing and corrupting to something that is a religion event, born in Babylon, which is the one? Teruah.
Yeah.
They don't even refer to Teruah. They call it Rosh Hashanah. Which is the Babylonian New Year. So,
Yom Kippur is pretty bad.
Right. Well.
They still call it
by the right name. Teruah, they just changed to a Babylonian holiday.
Straight up. Yeah.
Straight up. Yeah. So, pretty interesting. Now the next one I was
head of the year in the seventh month too.
Yeah.
I gotta like that.
The Nils, which is seventh month Shabbat right there. God is he's pretty clever. He's really when it comes to laying it out there, he'll let you dig and for as long as you want to dig. And every time you dig, you'll find something that's profound about what he said. The Nils, which is the an absolute disgusting lie perpetrated under the name of God. It is absolutely revolting. The Nils conspired to demean what the readers will assume is Judaism, especially with the erroneous reference to your special days for fasting. They did so, of course, with the addition of a host of words which do not actually appear in the text. This is what they wrote down. Well, I've just shared what God said. Stop bringing me your meaningless gifts. The incense of your offerings disgusts me. As for your celebrations of the new moon and the Sabbath, and your special days for fasting, they are all sinful and false. I want no more of your pious meetings. There is almost no correlation between that and what God actually said.
I don't really think they care what he said. Do you? I mean, really?
No, but I do. You should not increase it.
Well, you know, I do.
Habitually come, continuing to bring, because we have to deal with the fact that this was written in the imperfect. You should not increasingly and habitually come, continuing to bring, devastating and worthless, completely invalid and deceptively futile, tributes, gifts, and offerings. incense is a detestable abomination to me. I cannot comprehend, I cannot endure, nor can I overcome the deceptive and disastrous falsifications associated with her oppressive and lifeless religious assemblies, which hinder and withhold the benefits of the time of renewal and the Shabbat, the calling out of the Mikra, invitation to meet. And, of course, the calling out, this actually says Kara Mikra. Kara Mikra. What Mikra, Mikra is based strictly on calling out?
Teruah.
Tell me what. Okay, then the next statement, 114. Your times of renewal and your designated meeting times, my soul hates. My times of renewal. He didn't say that my designated meeting times. He says your times of renewal. What is their time of renewal?
Rosh Hashanah. Christmas, Easter.
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah. But now, if you're dealing with Christians, it would be Easter and Christmas. And your designated meeting times, my soul detests. So the person says, listen, that's not what Christmas and Easter mean to me. God is not going to judge me because that's not what they mean to me. Well, what did God say? Your times of renewal and your designated meeting times, my soul detests.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before, by the way.
My soul detests. Your times of renewal and your designated meeting times, my soul hates, abhors, loathes, despises. So I don't care if it's Rosh Hashanah or if it's Christmas and Easter or Ramadan. God has said, my soul detests them.
Yeah. Shanae, I hate.
I hate. Shanae. I hate. I loathe. They have literally become an annoying problem to me. By the way, you know, is it appropriate for, politically correct now, and the whole problem, the reason that there's violence in the world is because people are hateful. If we just got rid of the hate, we'd all live together happily. Well, God just said,
I got to tell you a good one here.
I hate multiculturalism is what God would be saying here. I hate
right. Yeah, which I had it out with a Hashem guy the other day.
Oh, okay.
He had posted where some Muslims had knocked the head off of a Mary, a venerated statue of the Mother Mary, and I said, "Good for them. That's the one thing they've ever done right in their damn life."
Yeah.
And he said, how dare you, Hashem? I said, I don't know who the name is. I said, could you be talking about Yahweh? Because he wants those things destroyed. He's not happy with those things.
When he returns, he's not only going to destroy them. He's going to take the remaining dust and he's going to bury them in volcanic caves.
He tells us in Dabarim to take those religious buildings that are spread out under those beautiful trees and burn them to the ground and knock their pillars down. That's pretty clear stuff.
One of my sons really wanted to be an archaeologist. And his favorite period is of archaeology would be that of ancient Greece. And what I've told him is then you better go off if you want to see the Parthenon. You better go off and see it now.
Because it ain't going to be there.
It's going to be dust. Now, there are going to be a lot of marvelous things to see. But the pyramids and the Parthenon and Karnak, no, that...
We will be free to travel through time and go back and watch it be built.
That could be kind of a cool thing to watch. That goes back to one of my pet peeves, the pyramids are so great. A stack of rocks. I do not get this. And people say, well, look, they can line up under these stars. So what? What are you talking about, astrology? Somebody was into astrology or possibly astronomy? I don't know.
Astronomy, just astrology. That's probably.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, obviously, yeah. That's what it was. But, you know, you sit there and you go, a stack around. And how many hundreds of thousands of people do you think died making these monuments to these jerks?
Yeah. Now, I would ask you, why is it appropriate for God to hate religious holidays? God says, I hate them. Why?
But see, they would be misleading people. They'd be leading people away from reality, wouldn't they?
Right, they would, because the benefits of his time of renewal, the benefits of his Shabbat, the benefits of his Mikra, are foreclosed on those
story.
who are fooled into these counterfeits. That's why he hates them. We should hate them, too. We should hate Christmas and Easter, because Christmas and Easter preclude people from understanding the benefits of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. The Christian myth of worshiping God on Sunday precludes people developing a relationship with Yahweh based upon the promise of the Shabbat. Yep. Now then, God's this sentence was not over. The next thing, the statement God concludes with says, I am weary. I have grown impatient and exhausted of enduring their duplicity. Whew. Wow. Of their dishonesty. I am just tired of forgiving their fraudulent nature. Wow.
Being duplicitous is not a good thing, and this is what happens when you walk into any religious organization. You're duplicitous immediately.
Yeah. And with the spreading out of the palms of your hands, you know, all those people, particularly the Pentecostals, they put their hands up and they wave them.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was trying to get to where that was. I was like, what is the spreading of the hands? And that's a good depiction. I suppose a lot of them do it. Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Oh, you look at the Muslims as they do their raka, they do their prostration prayers. They have their hands out when they do it. And, of course, people making donations, contributions to the church, they're putting their hands up. So it says, with the spreading out of the palms of your hands, I will hide my eyes.
Yes.
And I'm going to hide my eyes from you.
I know who did spread his palms out. And I'll tell you what, he doesn't need anybody else's help. So, I mean, that's kind of a little dig there, too.
Yeah, God's
saying,
I did this. You don't need to do it. In fact, it's like me offering a quarter to buy the beer in the clubhouse. You know, thank you very much. I took care of it. I don't need you to do it. You know, all the people that want to... the Roman Catholics that want to reenact the Passion, and so they have themselves carrying crosses. Yeah. No.
Well, they got an organization over there in the PI. They nail them up in the Philippines. Yeah. They nail themselves to a cross for them. And then it's a miracle that they live, you know, it's out of their faith. The thing about crucifixion is that it generally took a long time to kill you because you died of suffocation. I mean, you know, you could always push yourself up with your feet. That's why they broke their legs, you know.
Yeah, that was the humane way to torture them, was to break their legs.
Well, once they broke their legs, then they could go ahead and die. But, you know,
right.
Before that,
the
they could push themselves.
A more humane way to torture them. Also, because you choose to make many long, and you could even, because it's rabbinic, and worthless prayers, abhorrent pleas, and repulsive petitions. You know, all this praying, all these public prayers, God's saying they're worthless, that are abhorrent, and your pleas and your petitions are repulsive. They're abhorrent. They're worthless. I will not be listening. And all the people that just want to, let's pray. Oh, we need to pray for this. We need to pray for that. Pray for them. Pray for your country. No, God says,
no,
your worthless prayers, your abhorrent pleas, your repulsive petitions, I will not be listening.
So you don't think the candlelight vigils will work out?
No.
As far as
what it even says is that part of the problem is that those hands that you're holding out are full of iniquity, of killing people. And they are, because of the fact that the religious support of the government and their military politically, and the religions lead to the deaths of countless souls.
Yeah, it's both ways. It's both literal and spiritual. It's physical and spiritual, I should say. So it's literally killing.
Right.
That's all it's doing. That's all it's ever done. It's never done anything.
But one of the things that we'll get to on a future program is when Yitzhak asked his dad, Abraham, he said, listen, you know, I see the wooden pillars. I see the fire. But where's the lamb for the uplifting offering? you know, for him to say, where's the lamb, then for somebody that was raised by a father who came out of Babylon, the only way for him to say the lamb is for Yahweh to have shared his Torah, because no one else would have been using a lamb for this feast, this campfire.
Wow, that's quite an insight. You're right. You're right. That's profound. He was already teaching him.
Oh, of course, he was teaching him. But then what I was wondering is, okay, the culture that Abraham came out of, what animal did they sacrifice? So I started looking for what animal was sacrificed in Sumer, and what animal was sacrificed in Babylon, and what animal was sacrificed in Greece and Egypt and in Rome.
I'm going to guess the bull.
What animal was sacrificed?
I'm going to guess the bull.
Absolutely, was ubiquitous no matter what early culture I picked. What animal
was
the most prone to being sacrificed?
I don't know.
The Aztecs, the Mayans, the Incas were all the same. The Druids, the same animal was sacrificed by the Druids, the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas.
Well, that was people.
The Carthaginians, the Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Greeks, and the Romans. Same animal was sacrificed. Which one was it? Wasn't a lamb.
I thought it would be a bull.
Nope.
You know, other than humans. When you say Aztec and Incas, I mean, immediately humans.
It was
humans.
By the tens of thousands.
I believe it.
It was humans. That's what the religious would sacrifice. And there's a reason they sacrificed humans. And that is because if you didn't capitulate, if you didn't surrender, if you were not terrified into
you'd
be the next sacrifice.
Yeah.
What did the Roman Catholics do? They sacrificed humans, any human that challenged them. They burned alive. They tortured first, and then they burned alive.
Oh, yeah, they were.
So I probably did 50 Google searches of what animal was sacrificed in Sumer. And finally I came to a whole series that was done by a series of researchers where they said that over the last 10 years we have learned that the sacrifices in Sumer were entirely human. And that they would that the men, they would drive 2 1-inch spikes through their heads, and the women one-inch spike through their head, and they drove these spikes through their heads when they were alive. And they did thousands at a time. And then they took those bodies and they put them in an oven, not to incinerate them, but only to dry them out, and then they sprinkled them with mercury so that they would not decompose rapidly, so that they could specifically parade them in the streets and before the temples to elicit fear and to get their God's attention. You think that
This
should get your attention. This should get your attention. Wayne Mitchell just DM'd me and wanted to know if he could send 25 cents towards Blog Talk Radio.
I was having this conversation with someone at work.
I told him you'd be holding your breath. Just ask for blue. You know,
there are a lot of things in my life that I regret. But, you know, the very fact that I worked hard and I earned a considerable living in business and then was humiliated publicly, that prepared
one of them,
me to be able to take the time to do this, to spend 6 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day doing this, and then to be able to give all of it away. And it's not free to give it away. I paid a lot of money to be able to give it. Yeah, to give it away. But I'm in a position where I can do it. I want to say something.
I'm like, how much money have you gained? You've spent money on this.
But
what
I want to say, in terms of giving things away,
money to keep the cult built.
In my opinion, Richard, who hosts all of this and prepares it all on his site, I think Richard has made a far greater contribution than I have. Far greater.
He does a lot of work.
Yeah. And if you look at the amount of time, Larry, that you've invested in this and taken away from your business, you've contributed far more than I have. And so,
that is
the way that Jira wants it to be. He put us in a position to do this. And like in Richard's case, you know, he's on his feet. He can do it, so he does do it. Have you ever heard Richard once say, you know, boy, I really need some financial contribution to be able to do this? And
no.
If you were to offer it to him, he'd say, what does it say on my site? It says, no, I don't want your contributions. This is my contribution. I want to do it. I feel good about doing this. Right. That's a guy that I used to talk to regularly. We used to exchange emails all the time. There's a guy that has had a significant influence on all of us. It's profoundly changed my attitude on a number of issues. So, you know, we all make our contribution, and happy to do it. It's not like we're making a contribution to Yahweh's plan. You know, it's not like we're saying, here's my quarter, God, or
we're doing the opposite of that.
Right. All we're doing is sharing what...
Look at this plan.
But he wants us. He wants us to engage and to work at learning what he has to say and share it. He wants us to do that.
Well, I was talking with a friend of mine at work the other day, and, you know, we got on the topic of sacrifice. And I was like, you know, what is the definition of sacrifice? By definition, a sacrifice is giving something up to gain something.
Right.
You know, Passover, do we sacrifice anything? What are we giving up? We give up nothing.
Nothing.
We gain everything.
That's why
when you spend time translating?
No. No, because the
you don't
time
give up
that
anything.
I'm investing,
you gain
the time
everything.
I'm investing in it is my most enjoyable time. It's my most rewarding time. But also, I'm getting back an infinity times the amount of time that I'm dedicating to it.
And when we share this with people online or in person or whatever, we're not sacrificing anything.
Nothing.
Yeah, it's not a sacrifice of my time to share what I know with other people.
No. Right. Nor is participating in Pesach, Matzah, and Makkorim a sacrifice.
No.
The reason I think sacrifice is used
I enjoy it.
Is because Yahweh did make a sacrifice to enable all of this. And he had to do it.
Yeah,
the only way that Yahweh can be just and fair is to resolve the issues that we all have by paying the ransom, by himself being willing to endure the penalty. And so it's the only way he could be just and fair and resolve us to perfect us and to liberate us from our own failures. And so he did make a sacrifice, but we sacrificed nothing. I've never
sacrificed 100% is.
Correct. That is correct. And truly, the most fun I have is doing these translations and writing the commentary. Somebody asked me the other day, can you just, you know, provide a scripture-only copy of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms? You know, that would be so valuable. And I said, no, I can't. First of all, you know, if there were Kirk and Larry and James and let's say that and Roy has gotten into translation, if everybody that was part of the family all decided collectively that we were going to devote ourselves to translation only, and the 10 years we have before we're out of here, we couldn't complete it.
There'd be another problem too. The other problem is, let's just say I throw up Yasha Yah, where you don't give all the, commentary with it. Okay, you just, you know, somebody reads this and go, that's his idea.
Right.
I mean, there's
well,
no
part of it too. About a third of the commentary is this is why I rendered the word this way.
I chose
this. This is what this word means. These are the related words, and this is the context that it was conveyed in. So that the words are conveyed in as complete and as accurate and transparent a way as possible, and so that people can say, you know, well, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think maybe this other rendering is better. Okay, you've been empowered to do that by the paragraphs that explain the nature of the words, or there might be a paragraph that explains the stem, the relational stem, or the volitional mood, or the conjugation and how it influences this. But the part for me that is exciting isn't that. The part for me is, what does this mean? You know, when you come up with the word lo yokal in the context of religious behavior, and God says, I cannot comprehend it, I cannot endure it, I cannot overcome it.
Yeah, I don't even have the power to avail over it. I mean,
don't you think that maybe getting people to stop long enough to say, what does that mean? What did God just tell you? We're going to deal with that.
Have the possibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
I set out with the goal of just translating. I didn't want to do any commentary. I was just going to translate.
You're right.
And I found it literally impossible to do.
Me too. Yeah, I found it. I find it absolutely
impossible. The farther
impossible.
I got, the more I had to add commentary on why I chose the translation I chose. Then, you know, once I saw the connections, I could not help myself but put those in there.
Correct.
I got to share something with y'all. Y'all appreciate this. This is in the verse we were just talking about. I looked up Rabbi. And Rabbi, Rabab, Exalted One, Impressive, Great, all that kind of stuff. And then there was another one. And it was called Aluqua. Y'all know what that means?
Aluqua?
It means...
Not off the top of my head.
It means a leech. A parasite that takes away the substance of another by bleeding. The bloody hands of these rabbinical people. I about fell down, and it was too late in the night to holler.
You know, it's just like Yahweh constantly calling Shaul the plague of death and condemning
over,
him by name,
over.
And rabbinic Judaism, which is now the only surviving form of the religion, and Yahweh using Rabbah throughout and Rob throughout his discussion.
And then they named themselves that.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like
the Shoah Shav thing.
Yeah, it's like in Islam, halal food being good when it's in fact Satan's name. I know, it's really...
Or Lord.
Yeah, it's in your
Lord's
faith.
Another good one. Bible's
Satan
another good one.
Being so repulsive that he's going to make the terrorist act of Islam, Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater. Greater than whom? And what does Yahweh say about Halal bin Shakar? Why was he thrown out of heaven? Why was he sent down to
He
Israel?
Wanted to be greater.
There you go.
Greater than God.
It's not hard to make that connection, is it? And yet,
and yet
Satan has it.
Not if you have half a brain.
Walking east towards the rising sun and making...
Right.
Religious buildings where there's worship occurring that are out of sun-dried bricks.
Right.
Hello.
And using your rhetoric.
I mean, I could talk to an eighth-year-old and get that across. I really could.
Correct.
I could.
Correct.
Easily.
Yes.
Yeah. So you'd have better luck with a kid.
They have that, too. They would actually be listening, you mean? Yeah, that might help.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a piece I want to share with you guys.
Okay.
And it had to do with some of what we're talking about here, because over the years, I've seen a plethora of circus acts, advanced by the carnival barkers who used to enrich themselves with TV ministries.
Oh,
and the other day, I was trying to consider which most ridiculous money-grubbing scheme I had ever personally witnessed. And here's the one I settled on. You know, as a background, there was a husband and wife team named Jimmy and Tammy Faye Baker.
Right.
And they were total hucksters that really understood what a religious sucker was.
Leech their faithful's money. They had a whole community built for them.
Yeah.
Come to this community,
And the big high rollers will take you to a special dinner and bilk you out of $1 million. I'm sure that was the deal.
Look at the money made by the 700 Club.
That said, Tammy Faye was so ratty, I wouldn't take her to a dog fight if she were the defending champion. Okay, and this leads us to the most ridiculous hustle.
Yeah, talk about whitewashing. She had more makeup. You know, if she ran into you, it would take 1,000 showers to get it off.
Stop taking the words out of my mouth, Craig. Tammy Faye Baker makeup kits.
You're the punchline.
Tammy Faye Baker makeup kits. And they trotted her out like she was Jessica Biel or Sophia Loren in her heyday, I swear. You could see the whiskers sticking out from underneath her pancake makeup. She wore enough makeup to supply an entire Lakota Sioux tribe when they were on the warpath. Oh, stop right there. God, she was horrible. That has to be the worst hustle I ever saw. Tammy Faye Baker. She is the unequivocal queen of eyeliner.
The greatest hustle in the history of the world is the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, they have placed more people out of more money than any other organization in human history, and there's no one really close to them. But in terms of just slime bucket hustle, you're right. They are a winner. But of course, Benny Hinn, who is the guy that invites you to his dinner and a show,
as you say.
Right, yeah, dinner and a show. And when he was confronted by a good friend, he says, okay, you know, I've watched this for years, and I just got to ask you, is there a single person in all of the years that you have actually healed?
No. And he said no.
No.
I know. These guys are
crazy.
They're
shameless. Not.
But he learned his stick, you know, he learned his stick from Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts did the whole university and everything else based on the very same thing. The old tent shows where he would go around healing everybody, supposedly.
Yeah. It was like a prodigy.
Hey, by the way, what is the view on signs and wonders?
Say again?
These are going to mislead you. Sorry.
They're used by the people who mislead you.
That is correct.
Yeah,
was not showy. He is definitely not show-off. But was not to show-off.
Well, you also
did some miracles, you know.
Don't tell anybody.
Moses, you know, being there and parting the Red Sea, that's pretty awesome. But is there few and far between? A little huckster that shows up and wants to perform a miracle every 10 seconds.
Moses didn't part the Red Sea. And in fact, it was actually
the
Gulf of Aqaba. And so will Yahweh intervene to save his children?
Protect his people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. But he'll do it. In fact, you know, we read Mizmor 91. Yahweh says, you know, I'll devote 1,000 of my malach if it's needed to keep you safe. If you're going to be willing to risk your life to engage in saving people's lives and supporting the life as I have articulated in my Torah and through my covenant, if you're going to engage and do that and you're going to expose religious lies, then I'll devote 1,000 of my malach to you. So he will. If you're doing what he wants you to do.
There's a key difference right there. That is protecting his family, not
that is correct.
Trying to convert people to his family.
That is correct.
Yahweh will engage to protect you. He is not going to engage and give miracles to win people over.
Yeah.
That's
I would ask you a question because it was in a letter that Roy wrote. But, Larry, when was the first time that you were introduced to something that I said and began to read what I'd written?
Actually, the first time was on a radio show. You were actually invited onto a Christian network because you were talking about the ills of Islam, and you went right into churches being just as bad. You started talking about church steeples. You might recall this, where with the sun. Of course, you did thousands of shows back then. You may not remember. But you said it was the first and last thing to kiss the sun, and this and that.
Right.
I said, whoa. We've all been here.
And I was invited on that show because of my expertise on Islam, because of the Prophet of Doom.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. What I have found is that the overwhelming preponderance of those who have come to the testimony of Yahweh presented through Yada Yah or an introduction to God or questioning Paul, that the overwhelming preponderance did so because of Prophet of Doom. Roy was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's really not why I did. It was indirectly, but see, I started reading Prophet
of Doom. You never would have heard me on the Christians.
That's true. And I started reading it, but it was so, God, it took me forever because it was just garbage after garbage after garbage.
Oh, I know, it's overwhelming. But and in truth, it was Prophet of Doom that led me to Yahweh.
Sure.
Yeah, I know that because it's hard to do translation.
Yeah. And so you
well, once you know who God is, it's easier to understand who He is.
Correct.
First of all, I didn't have to get very far for it to strike a chord. Yeah, right away up front, I remember reading one of my favorites to this day, where he says, "You're not going to call me Lord anymore. You're going to greet me as an individual." And I said, "There it is."
There it is.
And then I said, wow, it turns out Yahweh is not a religious deity, which made total sense to me, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Now, but that doesn't make sense.
I never have to be to hear Lord from their lips ever again. Ever again.
Yeah, that's right. And so,
Perry would have never heard your own Dr. Stan had you not been invited for
Right. Yeah,
the one show
did he point out Yada Yada? At that time, I don't even know the
show on Yada Yada, and then he asked him, he pretty much told him never come back, didn't he?
Right, he said it was the single most listened to show in the history of his program. But he
never have you on again.
That is correct.
What a business.
Just go to show you where it's from.
I did about 30 shows on Prophet of Doom. And he asked me back on, I said, I really want to do a show on Yada Yada and Questioning Paul. That's what I want to do. And you can play devil's advocate, and you can disagree, but he gave me all 2 hours to present it. And at the end of that time, he said, never again.
And so they're all standing around a radio screaming at it, these tons of people.
What was interesting is that the number of people who came to know Yahweh because of that one show is huge.
Oh,
really?
Huge. Oh, yeah. Huge. Yeah, huge.
That was that show? That's the one we're talking about?
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, good for you. I mean, you walked into the lion's den, didn't you? And that worked out.
Let me ask you a quick question. If indeed, and it will happen, I'm sure they're going to start cutting this all off.
Yeah, they are.
We just talk to whomever?
My deal with Yahweh is not to sweat that. It's not my job.
Yeah.
Larry's got his Facebook interactions. Not my job. I'm glad you do it, but it's not my job.
Well, they can cut that off too, which they probably will.
Yeah, they could, I'm delighted you do it, and I support the fact you do it. Not my job. And promoting this and dealing with what's going to happen when they try to shut it down. Not my job. My job is to, and I hate to. Oh, I don't mind using the term job. I like it. It's fun.
My favorite work.
My job is to translate what Yahweh said as accurately and completely as I can, and then make the connections that help provide insights, so that first me and then others have the opportunity of knowing what God said. That's my job. That's my only job as it relates to this. I love that job. I feel no pressure. It's totally fun. And whether five people know it or 1,000 people know it, and the number is very close to 1,000 now, it's not, again, not my job. I don't worry about it. So, yes, we are running into that time. And if we were in any business other than Yahweh's business, we would be coming up with contingency plans. But it's not our job.
No.
Yahweh wants to share his testimony, and he's fully capable of making it available to people that will respond positively upon hearing it. And there will be no chance whatsoever that the entirety of the message that we have provided will be completely hidden. Even if there it's, you know, it's replicated in so many different places in so many different ways that it'll be available. People will find it.
Right.
Yeah. But that's not our job. We don't need.
There's enough of us out there that have copies and will be willing to share it in whatever form there is.
But you know, it's well, clearly, having more people of like mind, of similar interest in Yahweh's home for eternity, is better. The more, the merrier. So long as we're all of the same mind and same attitude and enjoy the same things, the more, the merrier. But I would much rather have members of the covenant family enjoy this time where we are learning and growing and getting to experience what it's going to be like to live with Yahweh. I would much rather focus on that. You know, how many times did Yosha tell Shimon Kefesh, feed my sheep? Mm-hmm. He didn't say, I want you to go out there and offer my food to all those people out there. And he said, I want you to feed my sheep. I'm not Shimon Kefesh. I wasn't personally chosen by Yahweh. But same job, feed my sheep. That's why I stopped doing Shattering Myth and started doing this full time, because feed my sheep is appealing.
No, I'm glad you did, too, because we're getting into a lot deeper translations and a lot more different subjects. I'm glad you stopped it. Really? I am.
Yeah. And this is
but let me tell you something.
Like these
I did have
so
people,
much better than anything else.
I had people contact me on FB because of Shattering Myths. You know?
It definitely had an impact.
Yeah, it had an impact. I'm glad we did it. And, you know, I dearly loved being able to spend time with Scott, and Scott's a covenant member because of it. So was the entire time worth it just because of Scott? Absolutely. But
yeah, it was
there
great.
Are a lot of people who are covenant members now because of that program. And there's lots of people that have been left without excuse. And so, you know, I receive emails every week from somebody that listened to Shattering Myths and has subsequently become a covenant member.
I'll say this too. It's a total waste of time talking to the religious. We all agree on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right. It's a waste of time.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. But it is usually a waste of time talking to anybody. And even though I'll do it. And the reason for that is they have no interest. And I think it's due to the fact that religion has turned them off so bad that they think God's a religious deity. They think Yahweh's a religious deity. They can't fathom that he's
capable of knowing beyond that.
But once they do what Abram did, which is walk away from Ur of the Chaldeans, from Babylon, and to the point where they're at least receptive. I remember very early on in this.
But it wasn't just religion that made you walk away. And I don't want to interrupt you.
No,
it was beyond.
But, you know, I was very early in this process. I was on the farm in Charlottesville. And we had a housekeeper who was a married that we allowed to live in one of our homes. And she and her husband had a baby. And we had some roads, and they would, in the evening, use the roads to walk the baby through the farm. And they would always walk by the cabin where I was doing most of my riding. And we would talk. And they were Mennonites. And in the Mennonite community, you got to wear the little religious outfit, and the women are treated like...
Mennonite is just one step away from Amish. That's all.
Amish, yeah. And the Amish are essentially the Anabaptists that the Roman Catholics tried to annihilate in Europe.
Yeah.
It's an extremely religious culture. And to leave it, man, you are really orphaned. Everybody hates you if you leave it. But every evening they would walk by the carriage house about the time I was wrapping up. And I would walk with them back around the loop. And we would talk about why Christianity was wrong and who Yahweh is and what he's offering. And they're Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a while, after a number of those walks, They said, you know, we're leaving the Mennonite community.
Hadn't they already been dismissed, though, by the Mennonites by this point?
Nope,
or no?
Nope. They were still.
Well, you know, I'm not saying you can't get through. But there was something about that community that bothered them, Craig.
They were old, big time. Yeah, they were abused. And they knew that the leaders, the elders, were hypocrites, and so they were open to the truth because they knew that the Mennonite religion was a lie. And you know, still from the husband, I receive an email for updates of whatever I'm writing or question they might have about once a month. This is years and years and years after.
It's a beautiful story. I mean, it's a beautiful story. You could stand a chance with somebody like that because they had been in a closed community and they saw it for what it was. Right. There's more.
Well, they were already questioning in their own mind.
Right.
Well, when we're walking out of Babylon, it's exactly what I was saying at the start of this. We're walking away from a lot of things. We realize, you know, there's one straight game in town and everything else is a carnival.
Well, for example, in their case, they were living in the Mennonite community and they moved into one of our homes. That was their trip to Charon.
There you go.
They were already in the process. No, I didn't prevail with them. They were religious. They were already in the process of moving away. You can't prevail with somebody that's religious.
Yeah.
But Yahweh's words resonated with them. You know, I remember the first one of the very earliest people, of course, was Jeff Grill, who's probably listening tonight. And, you know, he's a surgeon, and he's Jewish, and the story resonated with him because he was so opposed to the harassment of the rabbis, and he knew they were total frauds. So coming to know God,
it's like
it
Lisa,
really is.
Same thing.
Right. Lisa, same thing. But my good friend Yoel, that's not his real name, but we're going to use Yoel as a pseudonym. You know, he was he's racially Jewish. He was raised to be a Roman Catholic. During the confirmation hearing, he asked the priest a bunch of questions, like, you know, you want to tell me that if I don't agree to acquiesce to all of your demands here, that you are going to excommunicate me, and from your point of view, that means that I'm going to spend my eternity in hell. Is that correct? And you say, yeah, that's correct. Why would I want to be a part of this? Yeah, why would I want to be a part of this? And the priest called up his parents and said, you know, this is what he said. This is completely unacceptable. Your son's going to go to hell. And they said, well, then we're going to be there with him. Goodbye.
Hear that.
Just for them.
Yeah, hey, goodbye.
Just for them.
And, you know, his mom and dad are socialist secular humanists. They're socialists. Very high up in the labor movement in America. And so this guy, who was as bright as anybody I'd ever come to know, and he worked with me in my last company. He was the first employee that I hired. And so he would come over as I was writing, and we would talk from, you know, I'd go out back out there after dinner, and we would meet, and we would talk from 10 o'clock at night to 1 or 2 in the morning. And we did it night after night after night after night. And after a while, he says, you know, I was anti-religion, and therefore I was anti-God, because I thought that God was being presented by religion. But when you tell me that God is anti-religion, and I can see that clearly he is anti-religious, and that all of my arguments against God, including this notion that either submit to me or I'm going to see to you're tortured forever in hell, when I see that is not what he said, the real God is really appealing, and all of my arguments against him disappear when I find out that he's as against the religion as I was.
But Yoel's a really sharp guy.
Right,
he listened. Plus, he's got balls. I mean, he's got balls.
He's got character.
You know, because when you stand there in front of the priest and he's about to confirm you, and you ask him this host of questions, and he gives you every answer you don't want to hear, and you say, I'm not interested. That's gutsy. It is gutsy. Because
and he's one of those. His wife became a covenant member. His children are members of the covenant. JB, you and your wife were both members of the covenant. Kirk, you and your wife, yes, both members of the covenant. Frank, who's got a chat room that corresponds to this show, he and his wife, Diane, who just got the clean bill of health from the surgery, both members of the covenant. There's a lot of multiplication here in husbands and wives. It's a marvelous thing. It's a wonderful thing.
Well, even families with William, or, right, or you got Jack.
Oh, you had somebody that got to know Yahweh through the work that you do. Larry wrote me a long letter the other day, and it's not just her now. There were 8 people in her immediate family.
That's deep. I read that. That was very sweet.
Yeah, she was defending you. She said, I know you've received a bunch of letters that are hostile to Larry. Said, let me tell you the Larry that I know. Yeah, that was really an amazing letter. Yeah, she was really sweet. And the fact she took the time to say this is how you responded to her, because she came to you open and not hostile to God. She wanted to know the God that you had come to know.
Interesting, she was raised. She was actually adopted by a preacher.
Wow.
A holy roller,
oh, wow,
I think, no less. And the guy was, he's one of these experts in Greek. He's got he's got a lot of titles and everything else.
Swalchi, yeah, is an expert in Greek.
Like that, yeah. Except he's probably for real. She's presented
but
him
with
God.
What does expertise in Greek get you?
We put that to bed.
A great understanding of a text that's meaningless.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
put it under the wrong X-ray microscopy. And what happened?
Right,
nothing.
I don't know. I don't even trust anymore.
Nothing.
I just have no interest in it.
I have no interest
in the Greek text aside from where it confirms the Hebrew, in which case I just read the Hebrew.
I guess it helps expose Paul. That's all.
It makes Paul even worse than he would be if all you read was the English translation of Paul.
It's so easy for me to look at the text of Matanyah, even though it's brought to us now by English through Greek as a translation of the Hebrew. It is so easy to see that it was written with the Hebrew mindset. And it's so easy to go right back to the Hebrew mindset in the words of Matanyah. So to be fair, I still do highly value what I read in Matanyah, because it's so easy for me to bring it right back to the Hebrew mindset. And
my thing with that is, you don't need to really understand Hebrew to translate Hebrew, but to translate the Greek text, you really have to have an understanding of Hebrew to have a chance at translating any of the Greek text.
Right.
Because you have to be able to translate it from the Greek to the Hebrew and then into English.
What's called the Olivet Discourse, which is the entire chapter, 24th chapter of Matanyah, where he's asked what will be the coming of the end, what kind of things are going to happen before you return. And he goes through and he provides all of this testimony. Well, every bit of it came out of Zechariah. So is it really easy to go back to the Hebrew mindset? Yeah, I can read it in Zechariah. That's what he said.
Yeah.
You also, one of the things with Dee, though, is that she went to a number of, she had left Christianity and looked at Judaism and then got caught up in the Messianic movement. She even went into Wicca, looking for the truth. She did it all. She'll tell you,
someone who's
bright,
really searching.
Well, she's bright. I mean, she's really bright. But when the truth, when she actually got a hold of the truth, she knew right away it was real. And, it doesn't take a lot for us to begin to understand, especially anybody that understands history, that people use concepts to conquer other people. I mean, that's part of conquering people.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and once you understand that, and then once you see the truth out there, and then you got Yahweh pointing all these things out. I mean, there's no money involved in this. That's kind of a big thing. You know, because there couldn't be if it were real. Could there?
Correct. No. No, of course not. No, it's,
you know, other than what you spend, and that brings us back to Tammy Faye. How's your wife look, Craig? Maybe
you're going to buy a kit for me? A little plaster here.
No, no, I was thinking she could sell kits. Certainly better than Tammy Faye.
I've seen Craig's wife. She don't really need a lot of makeup.
No.
Well, that's what I'm saying. She could probably come out there and go, this is the natural, you know. You sell them on yada yada.
You're making no money off that kit.
Yeah, I did. Bad. Bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I want to bid you all adieu. I started today with a interview on with Charles Butler on GCN, and then Kirk and I, we did the midday show, and now tonight, and you know, I've
almost 2 hours here.
I've
Charles
talked
Butler
a lot today. Yeah,
that's
Charles
okay.
Butler
what was it?
Today.
What was it about? What was it about?
Charles Butler. I did. Charles Butler was subbing for on Talk Radio Network for Sam Sorbo, and he needed a guest, and so he called Jerry McLaughlin and said, "Can I have a guest?" And Jerry said, "Ask me if I would do it." And I said, "Okay, I'll do it." So we did that show, and Jerry gave him my cell number so he could call me because he did not know the call-in number for Talk Radio Network. So I did the show, and then and of course. Charleston had my cell number. He called me later that night, and he said, "Wow, that was an amazing interview. I just can't get enough of it." And asked me to do his show the following morning. So that was this morning, and I did his show for two segments this morning, and it was okay. You know, we talked about the failure of the American invasions, making a bad situation worse, and Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya, and you know why would we continue to support a military and a government that was deployed to make a bad situation worse? And then we talked a lot about the nature of Islam, of how Allah was modeled after Satan, and what that means for Islam, and why we ought not be tolerating and accepting it. And we talked a little bit about the Kaepernick protest. So. Yeah, that was the interview today. It was fun.
Okay, just wondering.
It was interesting because when I called in to the show, it was in fact actually calling me in my cell phone to give me the number was Scott Burdink. Scott intervened and said, "Hell, I'll make this happen." So yeah, I was all right. We'll see. He wants to do a show on Paul.
Wow!
So it's going to be actually
really,
a show on Paul. Yeah, so I would do that in a heartbeat. Yeah, but we'll see if he does it. You know. Anyway, fellas.
All right. Well, you have a good weekend.
Hey, had a good evening. Very happy
Shabbat.
Yeah.
Happy Shabbat. Talk to you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.